Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy any investment based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hello and welcome to the Sunday Roast. It's Sunday the 31st of March. I'm Phil Carroll.
And I'm Kevin Hornsby.
Welcome to spring. Days are getting longer. So we saw the clocks go forward, so we lost an hour last night. How are you feeling, Kev? You recovering well after the operation?
Yeah, I'm starting to come around now. Very itchy after all the medication, I think. So my skin is suffering a bit.
Because normally sometimes morphine can give you, opiates can give you a bit of itchy skin, can't they?
Yeah, maybe it's painkillers. I don't know what it is. But I wasn't itchy until I started to stop them. And now all of a sudden I'm extremely itchy.
You have all symptoms.
I need some good cream. Do you know anybody who has cream?
Maybe we'll talk about that one in a bit. Okay, so it's going to be the final show in season 7 for a couple of weeks whilst we break for Easter and take some well-earned rest. In this show, we're going to bring you an exciting company and the first quarterly roundup of the 12 stocks of 2024, so please stay tuned for that. So let's have a look at some of the news stories that have dominated the headlines this week. Basically, Princess Catherine she dominated the headlines, and actually, out of respect last week, we actually pulled a sort of feature that we had on it, didn't we? Based on the fact that they announced, the news came on Friday that Catherine had been diagnosed with cancer, so we decided to pull our piece on it, But that news obviously came after the specific London clinic, known for treating members of the royal family, including Catherine, Princess of Wales, stated it would investigate a breach of patient confidentiality. Comes after reports surfaced that a staff member attempted to access Catherine's medical records. The hospital emphasised its commitment to patient and colleague trust, asserting that any violation would lead to an thorough investigation and appropriate action. So, I mean, it seems to me that probably you would draw the same conclusion, that the royals were forced to make this announcement based on the premise that presumably someone had got that information, whether it was the media, the paparazzi, or whoever had paid or bribed this member of staff at this clinic, and they were feared that it would be leaked through the mainstream media. So I think they had the hand forces. Pretty despicable, isn't it, what we're seeing here, Kev?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, the scenario was that last week we were saying, leave them alone, leave them alone, leave them alone. It's basically our message, and it is quite obvious that the press had details of this for days ahead of this announcement. They knew that they would get their backside sued if they put it out, but they wanted the story. So they pushed and pushed and pushed. Then it was obviously leaked that someone was trying to get the information, but that information probably, in my view, has already been gotten out and the press had it.
Yeah.
So yeah, leave her alone, just leave her alone, flip me. The last thing you need is crap when you're going through this.
You think of poor William? He's had his father, King Charles, diagnosed with cancer. He's had now Catherine. He's obviously got to be there to support them. The kids are at school. Yeah. They waited until the announcement for the Easter break, so you can imagine that your mum's got cancer. You know what I mean? Like the kids are
there,
that sort of thing. And then now, obviously, the fallout with his brother, and obviously Harry jumped on a plane, apparently, to come to see, obviously, his father. But, I mean, how much is social media? I don't know if you saw some of these exes and tweets on there and things that basically people saying, that's a fake, all that, the photo was released, wasn't it, that they thought would have been heavily adopted. And then, obviously, Catherine came out and said, yeah, well, I do a little bit of photoshopping and things like that. And everybody was basically saying she was dead. There's no way, that she's alive. Now, even on the video, she's the way you see her sort of announcing that she's got cancer. And they're saying that's a deep fake. I mean, where do you draw the line? And when should social media be accountable for allowing these conspiracy theories to sort of just perpetuate? It's shocking.
Yeah, it never is accountable, is it really? Let's be honest. We see both the good and the bad of social media and what we do ourselves. So, it's
sensationalist. I think you see
people are able to
sell stories, isn't it?
Yeah, no, it sells stories, and that's why it's being done, So it for sure sold, got clicks online, a lot, and also sold some newspapers as well, So even though that's a dying art, if you like. But yeah, and I mean, Meghan and Ginger Boy effectively coming in and pertaining that they're really concerned about their sister-in-law and stuff, and that's not about clicks and stuff. No, I mean, get a grip.
Yeah.
So yeah, not good Pat Hall. And then we moved on to
Royals. Yeah, I mean, obviously, we also heard on the same evening, actually, Friday night seemed to be a bit of a downer. We heard the news, the tragic news from Moscow, where ISIS claimed responsibility for a terrorist attack in which 139 people perished at the Chorus Concert Hall. Obviously, many more conspiracy theories are surrounding this. The director of Russia's most powerful security agency said on Tuesday that he believed the Ukraine, along with the US and Britain, were involved in the attack on the concert hall just outside Moscow. Ukraine, which has repeatedly denied any link with Friday's attack, dismissed the Russian accusations as lies, and Britain said they were utter nonsense. Islamic State, the militant group that once sought control over swathes of Iraq and Syria, claimed responsibility for the mass shooting. And the British Foreign Secretary David Cameron posted on X saying Russia's claims about the West and Ukraine on the Crocus City Hall attack are utter nonsense. What are they trying to stoke up here? I mean, you know, Russia could pretty much list its enemies, and it'd have a long list of them over the years. It's been to war with most of these countries, including, you know, obviously fought against the ISIS in Syria. It's been to war in Iraq. You know, we know it's funded wars. So they have got their enemies. You know, it wouldn't be surprised that why ISIS would want to go in from Tajikistan. But what do you make of them now sort of pushing it onto the West, the narrative?
I think it's way too confusing to understand.
Yeah.
I think there's you know, just many things that are going on that we have no idea what's going on. So I think it's very difficult to understand. Why ISIS attack Russia at this time? I mean, the only thing I think of is because of what's happening in Gaza, to be honest.
Yeah.
I can't think of another reason. But who knows? But there is no doubt we are in a pseudo world war, which is taking place in Ukraine. And it's the West against the East. It's the old enemies. That's what's happening. Yeah, I think before we get to the point where everybody wants to switch off because they want to enjoy the last few days on Earth, then we better stop this conversation. But it's not good. And, you know, we're coming now to a time, you're listening to this on Easter Sunday, and we have, whether we like it or not, 2 million people starving to death. And if this was an African country and they didn't have the food and it was infighting because of that, we would all be running to help them.
Yeah.
And the world, the Western world, is ignoring what's happening in Gaza because they could stop it tomorrow if they wanted to, but they've chosen not to.
Yeah.
It's terrible. It really is terrible what's happening.
And on to our guest company this week, Incantera PLC, established in 2010 as a University of Bradford spin-out, specialises in dermatological cancer treatments and has expanded into high-end cosmetic products with its latest offering, Skin Plus Cell. This product delivers vitamin B3 directly to skin cells, enhancing dermatological health. With a board led by Chairman Tim McCarthy and CEO Dr. Simon Ward, Incantera has developed a significant presence in the healthcare and biotech sectors, listed on Aquis with the ticker INC. The company recently announced a breakthrough deal with Marienhold in Switzerland, part of the AS Watson Group, to distribute Skin Plus Cell, providing a gateway to European and Asian cosmetic markets. The agreement promises the introduction of Skin Plus Cell across Marienhold stores, initially in Switzerland and Austria, followed by a broader European rollout. This partnership could significantly impact Incantera's financials, with scenarios suggesting potential revenues growing from $10 million in the first year to over $90 million in 3 years, emphasising Incantera's strategic move into the lucrative pharma cosmetic sector and its potential for global market penetration. We welcome Tim McCarthy, Chairman of Incantera. Welcome, Tim.
Thank you, Phil. Thanks for inviting me on.
Absolutely. So Tim, take us through the inception of the company in 2010, and then as I alluded to at the top of the introduction there, the spin out from the University of Bradford, and namely a bit about yourself and Dr. Simon Ward and how the landscape has changed from listing up until now.
Yes, of course. So the company originated from University of Bradford, and specifically on the campus of Bradford, there is a four-story building which is called the Institute of Cancer Therapeutics. And it's got about 100 people in it, right from professor level, very experienced PhD scientists, dedicated to early stage oncology research. So pushing the boundaries to try and find new treatments for cancer. And they get to a point in that sort of development. It's in the pharmaceutical world. It's very early research, as we call it, as opposed to the commercial development. And they have particular skills, very, very clever people. But they get to a point where they need to hand it over to companies like Incantera to do the commercial development. And Simon, Dr. Simon Ward, the CEO, as you introduced, was consulting at the time and got called in by the university to just get a little bit of advice about how they could take that next step. So it ended up in what is a classic spin out from the Institute into what is now Canthera. And if you look at the name, Institute Cancer Therapeutics, and squash it together, that's where you're getting Canthera PLC. And so there was a, Simon set it all up, got the initial VC funding for it, did a deal with the university whereby as a company, we get first look at everything they're doing. And under that agreement, in the last few years, we have taken three different sets of IP and intellectual property, I should say, which you know is in the development stage now. So that was what I would describe as the atypical start to a biotech company, profile developing pharmaceutical drugs, no revenues, loss-making, having to access financing as a private company through the typical sort of VC-type funding. And then in 2020, we came to Aquis and did a public listing. We raised money on the listing. We've raised money since. But typical profile where we're constantly going out looking for cash or for investment in order to fund the R&D. So nothing unusual about that until we got to an announcement that we made in December, just before Christmas, in fact. And I know you guys have covered that, so thank you very much for that. And this, that the announcement we made in December was the result of about 12 months of discussions that we've been having with, Marino. Because prior to that, we had a particular piece of IP, which is the basis for what products are that we're delivering to Marino. And on the one hand, we were developing that in the typical pharmaceutical regulatory environment and putting it forward towards a pharmaceutical drug. That is still going on in parallel. But when we approach Marino and in turn A.S. Watson's, they have health and beauty side to their retail, but they also have pharmacists, a bit like Boots here in the UK. So we approached them initially through a very, very good contact that we work with, who actually used to work for A.S. Watson at the senior level. So it's always good to go and talk to decision makers. And we actually pitched it to them to see where they'd like to get involved to come alongside us in partnership to develop the pharmaceutical side of it. And when we discussed it with them, they actually turned it around on us and said, well, actually, you know, this technology you've got, the ability to deliver certain compounds, in this case, niacinamide or vitamin B3 through the skin, would be perfect for us if you could turn it into more cosmetic or cosmeceutical, we call it. And we have an enormous gap on our shelves to fill the needs of our consumers who are getting ever more savvy. They demand a lot more from the products which they buy from us. Yes, they want a nice skin cream. It's got to feel nice on the skin. It's got to feel that it's doing them good. But they also want to know that they're putting something on their skin which is not going to harm them, but it's actually going to do them some good. And that's proven with some scientific evidence. And that's exactly what we have. So these discussions turned into quite a collaboration between us, and that collaboration is still ongoing, whereby we have designed this product range, which is now up to five individual products, different products, especially for Marino and Watson's, for their needs. So that was why it took about 12 months, because Simon and the technical team were in the laboratory just doing different formulations and getting the consistency and everything correct. And that's what culminated in the announcement in December. So Marino and Watson's are fully bought into this. In fact, you know, I use the expression in some presentation, it was almost like a demand pull, as opposed to we try to sell it to them, which is a fabulous position to be in, clearly. And what we announced in December was the deal and the collaboration with Marino. And that has had a fantastic response. And what we were indicating there was that we were going to be manufacturing the first order, delivering it around in the second quarter. And that was 25,000 units as the initial launch stock. What we've just updated the market on Monday was, in further discussion with Marino, we've doubled that order, or they've doubled that order, because the anticipation that they have from their consumers and their customers, they really want to make sure the launch goes out and they cover as much as they can in that initial stage. They've given us indications that the next batch or the next order will be a multiple more. And in the release, we said the next batch will be five times bigger, 250,000 units. So that starts to give people an idea of the scale of this rollout and the scale of the deal that we've got with Marino. And again, you know, that announcement on Monday was taken very well. And alongside it, there was initiation of a research note by Stanford Capital Partners, who are brokers. And within that, the analyst, a guy called Mike Jeremy, who's, I have to say, very switched on, and he's done a piece which is a typical research note, given a bit of background to the company, background to the technology and the science. And this is actually available on our website for any of your listeners that want to access it. And he's also done some financial projections. Now, they're his projections, so they're completely independent. I'm not disagreeing with them, but it's not my place.
Stop, Tim. Don't say any more. Say no more. Okay, please take the smile off your face. And tell me, just before you go into all of that, I mean, how does it feel? I mean, we like feely things here on the Sunday Roast. So how does it feel? Because, I mean, obviously, you've just painted the picture. You were struggling, trying to raise money to get something to go to pharma. And now, all of a sudden, it seems like you've arrived at the oasis here, you know, the sort of elixir situation where this cream can solve people's wrinkles, can make it better for them to go out in the sun, et cetera, et cetera. So there are a multitude of things that you obviously had to morph in the last year in terms of what you were doing to what you are doing. So how does that all feel?
In short, it feels fabulous.
Good.
I mean, it really does, because, you know, it's a tough old road in the biotech sector, having to raise money all the time. You're always under pressure from that perspective, and you're limited to how much you can push the development forward by what the financial resources you have. This completely changes the profile of the company. And we haven't forgotten the pharmaceutical side. It's still there. But this gives us the financial resources to push everything forward and gives us enormous profile, clearly. And from an investor's point of view, obviously, we've got some really loyal shareholders who have been with us for a while. We brought new investors on recently, certainly in this fundraising in December. And, you know, what this means for them is they can see a two-sided return for them. Firstly, if you look at the projections, the financial projections in the note that Mike has generated, and you look at his projections of revenue, you look at his projections of EBITDA, then, you know, that is going to be a company which is not worth what it's worth today.
For sure. I mean, so people can have a glance at this if they get the chance. But I've been looking at it myself, obviously, before we recorded this. And you're talking about revenues of 10 million, then 32 million, then 90 million, assuming that you move into the Asian market, which I'm quite sure there's no way that the Watson Group as a whole, and just so people understand, that's CK Hutchison Holdings, who own Watson Group, which is nearly a $15 billion company, you know, so we're talking about big boys here. That's if you go into the Asian market, which is where they are fundamentally based. They're obviously Europe and Eastern Europe and Asia is the main point. So, I mean, if you look ahead, I mean, and that's, I presume, why you're smiling. You know, 5 years revenue just staying in Europe was $43.7 million at 36% margin, which is $15.7 million. Profit or EBITDA, let's be correct. But if you move into Asia, it's 291 million at 36%. That's £104 million worth of EBITDA. That's quite shocking considering what your current valuation is.
Yes, that's one way of putting it. And the projections that Mike has in his note is as moving into Asia in the third year. If you look at the RNS release we put out on Monday, we're saying we're expecting to move into the Asia market in the first quarter of 25. So that's 2 years earlier than he's predicting. So quite right to point out the numbers.
But yep.
If you look at what we're saying, as opposed to what's in his note, then he's probably being a little bit conservative because...
Yeah, as they always are, because we don't know what's actually going to happen. But just to put some color on that for people, that this is basically, roughly speaking, the number of stores they have, if it was rolled out to all the stores, that big figure I talked about for 5 years revenue, £291 million, is basically each store selling 1,000 of these products per year.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So we're not talking about huge numbers. You know, we're talking, what is it, 20 products a week, you know, in terms of each particular thing. And you have five different products. So if you do get a consumer, they're not necessarily, I'm not professional in this, as I use no skincare products whatsoever, but knowing the women in my life, the scenario is they use more than one. So
yes.
A consumer is probably going to be buying several of these, you would imagine.
Yes, I mean, the range sits very nicely together, but the five we were initially launching with sit very nicely together. I mean, personally, I can see consumers buying all five because they all do a slightly different job. And so, again, you're back to the numbers that Mike has projected. There's conservatism in there always round in terms of the date of the launch into Asia, the assumptions you quite rightly say about the number of products that are sold per store, and the number of stores, because even when he's projecting the number of stores that we open up in Asia, that's way below the capacity and the number of stores they have. And this is a group which has over 16,000 stores across 28 different markets. You know, that's huge.
I mean, it's not huge. It's very few numbers of sales required per store to make it like huge, like very, very big company.
And I mean, absolutely. And Kevin, if I might just interject also, we're only talking here about the deal we've got with Marion & Watson's, and they have a certain geographic territories, which is essentially Europe and Asia. We're not talking about the North American market. We're not talking about the Australian market. We're not talking about the Latin American market. This is still ours to go for.
Yeah.
So, you know,
well, I'm sitting here talking to you from Cairo, and I know this would be massive in the Middle East. You know, especially the Suncare product, protecting yourself from the sun, et cetera, so, I mean, and there's plenty of people willing to pay high-end prices for those type of things. So, and just so everybody knows, when this starts to roll out, it will be in the perfume shop in the UK and Ireland. So for any of our listeners who want to try it out, that's where it's going to be once you start to roll it out around the European shops, which I presume is going to be later this year or early next year at the latest.
The initial launch is around the middle of the year, and that will be in Switzerland. And then it will roll out across Europe, including the UK, towards the second half of the year.
Can we talk a little bit, Tim, about the Freeka? Because obviously, and I know that they were chosen to be the effectively the manufacturer in Switzerland. I heard you comment on another interview whereby you said that the Swiss wanted it to be made in Switzerland. It's almost like an analogy with the French wouldn't drink champagne unless it was from the Champagne region. You know, that's sort of an analogy. But so is it, if you're looking to expand out into the Asian market, would Freeka potentially be manufacturing it and then sending it out, or would you look for a manufacturer in the Asian area to do that at a lower cost?
Yeah. The well, firstly, Freeka, they are a subcontract manufacturer of cosmetics, very high-end cosmetics, and they do a lot of manufacturing and product labeling, etc., some of the very high-end cosmetic ranges. I can't tell you who they are, clearly confidentiality reasons, but you know, you and your listeners would recognize every single one of them. They have a fantastic reputation, and we've got a contract with them where they're going to do everything for us to make formulations and package it and everything else. They are in Zurich in Switzerland, and because they are in Switzerland, located in Switzerland, we can put Made in Switzerland on the box. And that was another discussion that we had with the guys at Marino and Watson's. And actually, especially for the Asian market, although it's still applicable for the European market, they're made in Switzerland is seen to be a mark of quality, of cleanliness, of high end. It does resonate with the consumers, especially in Asia. So there was a request, both, you know, stroke, get up, you've got to do this, guys. I have a conversation. Can we have this made in Switzerland? So we've got Made in Switzerland on the box. Now, that works perfectly for us because, you know, we're a small company. We're not intending to get our own manufacturer. We're not going to invest shareholders' money in manufacturing plants or anything like that. So it's always going to be with a subcontract manufacturer. The fact is that Freeka are one of the best in the business. They're in Switzerland. We've got a very, very good relationship with them, and they've got bags of capacity for when this starts to roll out and build up. So it works perfectly. Absolutely perfect.
I just want people to understand, why would they buy this product as opposed to the next one on the shelf? So I want to understand, and we're not going to go too technical there, because we've said we will do another podcast which gives more of the technological. Because originally you were going for a pharmaceutical product. Now, the actual cream, I've written it down, but I'm not sure I can pronounce it, is Bucutaneous Skin Penetration. I probably said that wrong. And anyway, basically, the thing that you have inside the cream allows the delivery of things through the normally non-penetratable skin. Is that correct?
That's absolutely correct. Yep.
Okay, so can you give us a bit of background of what does that mean and why does that matter?
Okay. Well, you started the question with the what's the differentiation? And that is the differentiation, because you, if you go onto the internet, you'll find lots of products which have niacinamide or vitamin B3 as part of their package. So people buy them on the understanding or belief that they're going to get the benefit of having the B3 by putting it on their skin. The reality is they don't work. They go onto your skin, clearly, but they don't get through the barrier of the skin. And that's the patented intellectual property, the technology which we have, which you're quite right, we brought it into the company originally to develop as a pharmaceutical drug, and we're still doing that in parallel. And that will go through the normal pharmaceutical regulatory route. So it has to go through controlled clinical trials. We test it on patients, and we come up with evidence of what it can do from a pharmaceutical perspective. And then that's launched through the pharmaceutical industry. This is the same technology, but we've adapted it for cosmetic use. And, you know, it's a very, as I say, very difficult thing to do. You have to have two separate routes. One's pharmaceutical, one's cosmetics. But it's the same technology. It's a proven technology. We have our own internal trials. We have our own data to demonstrate that this formulation we have is allowing that niacinamide or vitamin B3 to be absorbed through the skin into the layers of the dermal layer where it's required to do its business. Now, we've actually taken a number of those products, which I mentioned earlier, that anybody can buy, you know, through the internet, and we've done a comparison test, a control comparison test between our own formulation and those, and they don't pass the test. Now, when I say the test, there was a clinic, a fully regulated clinical trial done in Australia a few years ago, not by us, but by another company that wanted to test the hypothesis of the benefits of a patient receiving niacinamide. They delivered it orally because they clearly didn't have the technology which we have. And without a doubt, they proved that it works. All the patients got the benefits which they were looking for. But the method of administration by mouth meant that they had to take an enormous amount of drug, because by the time you ingest it and it gets through all your body system to then actually go almost inside out to get to where it's required in the skin, your body has got rid of an awful lot of the drug. It's that's in the natural sort of way.
Yeah, I see.
So you've got to overload in order to get enough left that gets to the point where it's doing the job. Now, if you think of it going the other way around, sort of outside in, i.e. you're applying it through the skin, then you don't actually need an awful lot. So if you take those two things together, the reason that pharmaceutical application didn't work, it worked, but it's not commercially launched, is because you can't expect people to take bucket loads, literally, of this every day ingesting it. And it just doesn't work.
So the question I have based on your answer there is, you are a delivery system, basically. So what you've created is a delivery system. And that can obviously deliver many things, and I'll come back to that in a minute. Mm-hmm. But the scenario then is as it's delivered, it then achieves its objective, as in puts the B3 or whatever the word was you called it, into the right level of our skin to mm-hmm. help the skin to recover itself, yes?
That's correct, yeah. And you're right, actually. The USP, if you like, is the delivery system. There's nothing new about niacinamide. Niacinamide is a name for it. Vitamin B3 is another name for it. And I was saying about comparator with the other products that anybody can buy today on the internet. We have done comparative tests between the two of our product against those. And I referred to the clinical trial in Australia to make the point that we know what the performance level was, how much niacinamide we needed to get, the clinical trial needed to get to the point where it needs to, just under the skin's layer. And we can, so that was our benchmark, if you like. And we tried three different concentrations of our formulation. Each one of them passed the test. All the other products never got anywhere near.
So the elephant in the room is, what is stopping another company coming in, taking your product, replicating it, and selling it around the world?
Well, firstly, it's fully patented, which is, you know, one form of protection. And actually, it's not as easy as, you know, you might think, putting these formulations together. You know, there's a lot of know-how. There's a lot of time that we've spent to make sure that the formulation is absolutely correct. And it's about not just the ingredients. It's about how much of each ingredient you mix together. It's a very, you know, very complicated process. So it's actually not very easy for anybody to come along and just copy it. It isn't.
But you have a worldwide patent on this particular thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
But as I say, patents are one thing. It allows a company like ours, if anybody does try to infringe, to, you know, to prosecute and follow that through from a legal route. Probably the more important factor here is simply it's not like reverse engineering, which, you know, a lot of companies do in all sorts of industries. And they take an established product, whatever that may be, and they essentially take it to pieces and see how it's made and put it back together again, then copy it. You can't do that with this in the same way. You just can't.
Okay, very good. So I'm coming back to the point that I was mentioning earlier. Obviously, these are skincare products and we've got five variants. What else could this be used in? Because it seems like mind-blowing that this could be used in a million different things, you know, and not necessarily just in drugs, as in pharmaceutical drugs, but in many different processes that we need to take cream. I mean, I had surgery a week ago and I've been putting cream on, but obviously with this as a delivery system, it would be much more effective, I presume, on my wound. So yep. what other things can you use this for?
Well, there's all sorts of things which we can do, and we've already got our ideas on how we expand the current range. So the obvious next step would be to put an SPF factor in to all of our products. There are things like vitamin D, which we can deliver more effectively using this delivery system. And, you know, if you go back to the pharmaceutical side, there are a number of things, you know, which we can use the delivery system to deliver drugs, you know, through the skin. So there's many, many uses, Kevin, but we've got to walk before we can run.
We're
concentrating at the moment on delivering this deal with Mariano, getting it up and running, getting the revenues through the door, and, you know, then we'll come onto all that once we establish this.
And once you do that, you'll be sprinting, though. You will not be walking and then going to running, because ultimately, once the cash starts to flow, you'll be in a chain reaction almost of delivering this across the world. I mean, are you in any sort of talks that for the US, for Australasia, for Latin America, for the Middle East, etc.? Obviously, you can't tell me, but you can suggest. We'll take that as a yes, but anyway, carry on.
Yes, what I can say to you and your listeners is that we're very aware of the geographic territories outside of our deal with Mariano and Watson's. There is a lot of interest in this product range, but again, the exploitation of those areas will be done at a time when we've established this one, because this is important to us and we've got a really good relationship with the group and we want to see this through. But it won't be too long until we start reaching out into those areas like North America, Australia, Latin America, etc., because they're obvious markets for this type of product.
Yeah, and you've obviously been thinking, because you can see the path ahead in terms of what's going to happen. You're going to be flush with cash. So how do you see this from a shareholder's perspective? You know, dividends, buybacks, et cetera, et cetera. Where, I mean, you're pretty tightly held as it is in terms of the share capital. I don't know exactly how many shares there are, about 100 million or so
just under that, yeah.
Okay, so just under 100 million shares. I mean, if I transport you in the wee car here 2 years ahead, and you know your revenues are as suggested, even at the lower end, what are you going to do? You're going to have too much cash.
We've been pretty clear about that. I mean, I haven't had the opportunity to speak to you guys before, so I haven't talked to you about it. But when we've been certainly in December, we raised a little bit of money alongside the announcement, and these sort of questions were being raised at that point, and we've been very clear about it. There are two reasons for anybody to invest in Canthera. First is everyone can see, well, certainly now the note has been put out, everybody can see the projections, the financial profile, what it's going to mean to the company, and that is going to result in a massive increase in the share price and the underlying valuation, because it can't stay where it is now in terms of the market value, not with those numbers. And as you say, the revenues coming in and dropping to the bottom line in pure cash. I mean, that's a simple equation. Everybody can see and acknowledge that this is going to give an enormous return on investment, capital gain, to anybody investing in the company now. The second point is you get, it's almost like the classic MBA question. The company is very successful, a company is very successful, they're generating lots of cash, and the senior management, they say, well, what do we do with this money?
You give yourself a big pay rise.
No. So, you know, do we go out on a limb and start a completely new business and put our shareholders' money into that, or do we give it back to shareholders in one way or the other? You've always got to ask yourself your question, can I give a better return to my shareholder by reinvesting this cash we're generating to some other business, or can they make a better return for themselves if we give them the cash back and they invest it somewhere else? And the bottom line is we'll be generating so much cash, we don't need it, frankly, for our business, because as I explained before, we're not intending to invest in big manufacturing plants or big infrastructure or anything like that. So we don't need lots of capital expenditure or big investments. So the bottom line is, and I said it, you know, when we went round on the roadshow in December, we will be delivering dividends back to shareholders. I would expect that to be in first year. We have a financial year of 1st of April, so we're starting the new financial year shortly. And that's certainly the projections in the research note go from that date. So at the end of that first financial year, we will help generate cash. And my intention is to agree with the board to do our first initial dividend. So it's as simple as that.
Yeah. No, very good. It's very good. I mean, I think I'm just thinking in my head now, you know, I'm sitting in Cairo when it's 30 degrees centigrade here. And, you know, a sun cream with this delivery system has got to be much bigger than even what the products that you have suggested you're going to sell already, because everybody goes on holidays and use sun cream. If you've got sun cream with some sort of oncology protection as well as the SPV stuff, then, you know, it's like, I don't know, it's an amazing product if you think so, and a mass market product, not just a high-end product. So, you know, I can see there are many, many potentials for sort of amazing growth as you go through things. But as you say, execute, focus on what you've got now initially, and then, yeah, I think the other things will come just naturally.
I agree with you. We've got to keep our heads down, make sure we deliver. But the point about the prospects for this product in the rest of the world, they're enormous. And I think I used a phrase in December when we launched this deal, that this is transformational for the company. It absolutely is transformational. But to pick up on your theme there, Kevin, it's also transformational for the consumers, because there's not a product that's ever been on the shelf before like this.
Yeah,
it's going to make a real big difference to people. It really is.
Yeah. And my last point, which all of that is obviously very interesting and very exciting, is that if you have the cash and you then start to focus some of your attention on becoming that biotech company which produces a pharma product, which is then able to help skin cancer for the sake of argument in oncology, which was the original aim, I think, then you become into a different stratosphere. That's a different game completely to what you're doing now. So, you know, do you envisage that for the future of the company?
Absolutely. And that's the benefit of generating this cash, because I think I said earlier in the interview that the difficulty that biotech companies have, small biotech companies, is accessing the capital they need in order to invest in the R&D. It's a really difficult time for small biotechs. If we're generating the sort of cash, which we believe we will, and the projections say, diverting a little bit of that cash back into the pharmaceutical R&D is not going to be a problem at all, and it's still going to leave... you know, lots of room for maneuver in terms of paying dividends to the shareholders, or maybe you mentioned about share buybacks. That may or may not be another option that we can consider. But we're not going to be struggling for cash for that pharmaceutical R&D. So that means we can progress that in the most efficient way, in the quickest way, without having the restraint of trying to find money and to invest in it all the time, because that cash is going to be generated by this business. And yes, you're absolutely spot on. The opportunities for this type of product in the pharmaceutical arena, these are what we call blockbuster drug opportunities. And the phrase blockbuster means that you're selling at least $1 billion per year.
It doesn't mean you go to the shop and get a video then, huh?
No.
You and me are both old enough to understand.
I'm not even sure
showing your age now, Kev.
But no, that's it. Yeah, this is going to be a massive business. Incantera is going to be a massive business just through these products and how we roll it out, you know, the next few years. If we also, in parallel, develop a pharmaceutical drug, that is going to have multi-billion-dollar sales per year. It's an enormous opportunity.
Just say yes to it. That's enough.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I thought I'd put a color on it for you.
Yeah. Absolutely. Being that you're on the roast, it's a question we always ask. And we've been, you've not been on before, we'll ask the last season's question, which what is your favourite or your ultimate Sunday roast, Tim?
Oh, wow. Okay. I think I'm quite traditional that way. So roast beef, a Yorkshire pudding, roast potatoes, lots of vegetables, and definitely gravy. Got to have gravy.
You're a northern boy, I can tell. make sure there's some meat with my gravy.
Absolutely.
Indeed. Very good. Thanks for your time. Anyway, Tim, it's been really good catching up with you, and good luck. I mean, if you execute this, I think you'll be on an island somewhere in 10 years and you will have bought it, I think. So good luck.
All right. Look, it's great to meet you guys, and thanks for the opportunity to speak to you.
Yeah. And on that note, we'll say Tim McCarthy, chairman of Incantera. Thanks very much for your time. Okay. So, Kev, let's do a roundup of the 12 stocks of 2024. This is our sort of first quarterly roundup. We do this on a quarterly basis. What are we starting with on the 12 stocks list?
Well, let's just have a look at the overall. First of all, I think it's probably the best course of action, because obviously we're looking at a portfolio. And at the start of the time, we dictate the price when we record the things. Initially at Christmas time, we put a £10,000 investment into each share. So there's £120,000 in total. And as of, which I'm sure nobody will be surprised, as of the end of the first quarter, as we record this, we are currently at £105,010. So we're down 15 grand, let's say, which is just over 12%. So overall, you can never congratulate yourselves for a loss, because that's the sort of completely the opposite of what we're trying to achieve, which is growth. But there's been some surprises in there that we, you know, I'm shocked at, to be honest. So
is it shocking to you to say that the best performer of last year is actually the one that's down the most?
It is shocking, because it was also up in that quarter as well. So, you know, the fact of the matter is, we had a period of time where Chill was, when we picked it, it was 4.7p. And I don't think it got much above that, but it did go above that at one point, I think. And then subsequently, we've had all sorts of issues with the British government basically politicizing vapes, saying that they're going to ban disposable vapes. And, you know, I think people have run for the hills. And Chill, all during that period of time, have also raised at 3.75p. And so they're now cashed up. They've got cash to move forward. They've came out with many announcements in terms of different sales profiles, different agreements. Chill.com is moving forward. I mean, I think you're going to be surprised by that one in the next. I think the next time we talk about this 3 months from now, we will actually be up, in my view, not necessarily the worst performer. But yeah, maybe it's no surprise, but I still think...
I don't think it's any surprise based on the fact that living in this country now, all you hear on a weekly basis is negativity around vaping, around disposables. All right, yes, it's not applicable. There's ways around that. We've talked about the refillables and all that lot and the tank system. But ultimately, I still think it's got a bad rap. It's got you know, there's a program went out. Was it Jordan North, the ex-BBC Radio 1 presenter from Burnley? He did a big feature on vape, and it wasn't just about the addiction side. It was about, you know, the negative effects, the social effects, basically the harm on young people. They don't know. They're saying there's other hidden dangers. So it's still a lot of negativity, and I think the press is that's keeping it down. That's just my opinion on it. I think that's what we're up against, unfortunately. And
is it? Yeah.
You know,
I think the numbers will speak for themselves if they manage to, you know, get the revenues going. Because, I mean, let's put it this way. When you walk down the high street, how many people do you see vaping? Many more than you see smoking. Many more. Yeah. And many more want to do it socially as well, without the stigma of the nicotine and those type of things. So I believe that the zero nicotine situation is going to do very, very well in the UK. And Chill, primed and well-placed to be one of the main players in that market. And they've talked about expanding as well. And yeah, I mean, there was a thing, if you put it in context, there was a thing that somebody posted on one of the groups where a certain domain name .com, a one word one, I don't remember which one it was for sale now, currently at $10 million. So the question is, how much is chill.com as a domain name worth? I believe it's at least in that magnitude and possibly higher now. And if that is the case, then effectively chill.com is worth, you know, not very much less than its current market capitalization. So everything else involved is effectively for free. Now, you cannot look at it quite like that, but I'm still confident by the end of the year that Chill is going to be one of the better performers, to be honest. So
So watch this space. Okay,
let's chill.
So Conroy Gold and Natural Resources, obviously we saw some news middle of Feb, almost 6 weeks ago now, that the additional Clay Lake drill results with further wide gold zones reported. That's the sort of latest update. There was an interim put out the half-year results for the 6 months ended 30th of November as well, and also some scout drilling results as well from Clontibret. So what do you make? It's down around the 10p mark now. Still, the market just still, you know, just still recedes, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, why? No practical reason why. I believe probably in this next quarter or the following quarter that De Mere will probably say we want to move on to stage two, which will mean focusing on one particular asset. Very likely, in my view, that's going to be Clay Lake. And just to put it in perspective, Clay Lake is as big, if not bigger, than Greatland Gold's Havieron in terms of the potential number of ounces in the ground. And it's all shallow. It's not 2,800 meters down. It is between 0 and 250 meters down. So I just don't get it. But many people didn't get GGP for a long time before it finally people started to go, oh, aha. So again, still very optimistic. And yeah, what do you think?
Yeah, I think that the next sort of, not catalyst, but I think they need to move it to the next phase of that, as we talked about when we visited in November. You know, that's the commitment, isn't it? De Mere are obviously committed. We've seen the drill bit turning. We've been to all three sites that we've seen. And ultimately, I think that they need to commit to get that extra next level, stage two, take it to the next spend, and you know, hopefully start seeing some positivity around it. Because ultimately, it's like the market just doesn't believe it. I don't understand why. Gold's bust through the all-time highs. We've seen it around the 2100s, and yet there's not been any more value. In fact, it's 10p. I mean, I can't remember last time it was 10p, this stock.
I think in the new Conroy Gold, this is an all-time low. As in since, you know, the discoveries and subsequently getting the agreement with De Mere. Yeah, it's as low as it's been. So if you want in, I would suggest now's a very good time. Yeah. And just to go back, so Chilbrands is down 56% and Conroy is down 32%.
Okay. All right, next one, Celadon. Basically, there's been, I think, one or two announcements since the new year. The most recent one was basically where the company announced early economic analysis from the campaign chronic pain clinical trial, which was conducted by York Health Economic Consulting, and it revealed a significant 49.6% reduction in patient pain scores and improved sleep quality over 3 months using the cannabis-based medicines. Moreover, the treatments were deemed cost-effective by NICE standards, potentially offering savings for the NHS. This analysis paves the way for Celadon's engagement with healthcare authorities for the reimbursement of cannabis-based treatments. With the IDA's NHS Research Ethics Committee's approval, the campaign trial aims to enroll up to 5,000 patients. And now, obviously, we've had Jim on before, and he highlighted the trial's role in addressing the unmet needs of millions with the chronic pain in the UK, emphasising the broader potential of cannabis-based medicines for various conditions. So, great news on that. It looks like the efficacy of the product is there. And, you know, as you await more and more analysis, but what do you make of the company and where it is now?
I think what people have missed with Celadon is that Celadon is not out there to grow cannabis in whatever streams it is, though that is how it's going to fund itself going forward. And it has enough revenue and enough deals that are coming in that's going to allow it to do this. Celadon is a pharma play, and it's going to use the cannabis plant and the different strains that it has managed to get out to forward different things. I think one of them is the studies that they're doing on autism. The other one is the study on endometriosis. And those things are going to be worth hundreds of millions of pounds on an annual basis, in my view. And that's really why you would want to invest in Celadon, in my view. Yes, they have very nice facilities, and yes, they're going to grow, and yes, they're going to be, you know, cash flow positive probably this year as things kick off and they start to grow. But really, this is a pharma play and something that could be worth a lot of money. I think the UK has to be supplied, but more importantly, you've got the US and you've got Europe as well. You know, if you have a drug that has been approved by these different places, then, you know, you're going to have a lot of money coming in. And the thing is, the world knows that it works already, okay? But we seem to have to go through this process for safety and for everything else to prove it in trials. And that's what they're doing at the minute. So still extremely confident that Celadon's going to do very well this year. And probably much better next year and the year after, if you like. I think it's really one to buy and hold.
Yeah. Okay, next one. So we got Acuity Risk Management.
Yeah, well, Acuity Risk Management had some really good news at the end of last year. I think a big contract. And we spoke to Angus about them moving forward. I don't think that story's changed. What has changed is we haven't really had huge number of contracts in the first quarter. But having spoken to them, I think they're working hard to get more. Yeah. And it should be coming through, I think, you know, over the next period of time.
They got the one for like 561,000, and then there was an 88,000, and then about 104,000. So I think that their recent orders before that were like around 955,000, which was the sort of valued at the first 12 months revenue. So yeah, it's looking good. I think the people were getting, you know what I mean? It's like, oh, come on, we need some more wins. But it's difficult out there, right?
Yeah, it's difficult, but ultimately should be getting more. And I hope that in this second quarter, we will see the fruition of the hard work that they've done, you know. So we will see.
Okay, so on to Greatland Gold. Obviously, Sean's been on in the past. We had him on a couple of weeks ago. We had Charles Archer on last week talking about how he thinks things may pan out there. What do you make of that? I think it was currently around about the 6.5 pence mark. I mean, interesting news on the divestment of some of the portfolio from Newmont that was announced sort of about a month ago. Yeah, where do you see that one headed?
Well, again, let's just talk about Celadon down 27%, Acuity down 24%, and now Greatland Gold down 20%. Now, in the small cap market, they're all obviously not very good, but
That's just a daily swing, isn't it?
What good day, and they could all be at zero.
Yeah,
or they could be 50% down.
That's the difference between the bid and the that's the bid and the ask, isn't it?
Yeah, well, these are the mid prices that we use. But Greatland, in my view, is going to be, you know, excuse the pun, but a great story. I think, you know, there's gold in Havieron, and the ability to now probably have the whole of Havieron and Telfer and the processing facilities, etc. Yes, money will needed to be spent on it, but I think, you know, you're going to be talking about a pretty significant company if that happens. And, you know, the price probably doesn't just justify it, but I think people are waiting to see what happens. And that's why you've got the price that you have. When we talked about it, it was 8.25p. Now it's 6.5. Yeah, I mean, what can I say? I think I'm still very confident about that. I mean, we've just spoken about 5 different companies, and I'm still confident that there's a very, very good chance that maybe not all of them, but certainly quite a few of them will be in the positive territory by the end of the year. But let's see what happens. Because as we've said, and people have been saying on the groups, the market is sadly a bit broken. You know, we've seen 3 companies in the last 2 days leave AIM to go private because basically the capital systems are not working. You know, they're called capital markets for a reason, and that's what we were talking about last week, sure. And it is a bit of a rant in Power Metal Resources. So
yeah,
it's one of those things.
Difficult one. Okay, so then Technology Minerals. I think if we'd have done this review probably 2 weeks ago, this would have been like 0.65, 0.7 pence, but it has moved up, done very well in terms of from the lows. It's around the 1.05 pence or 1 pence mark. Obviously, there's been a few announcements, whether the barrel bikes. There's been a lot of sort of structuring announcements in terms of the CLNs, in terms of what's been done, the funding. They've had the extra round on the drawdown. So what do you make of the company going forward? Obviously, it feels like the RTO, Recyclers, is not been delayed, but that's just sort of lingering, isn't it? That needs to happen.
Yeah, well, everything was promised to be done by the end of this quarter, wasn't it? And here we are, and it hasn't happened. For what reasons, I'm not sure completely. But what I would say is that, you know, they haven't been helped by this financing thing, for sure. You know, who knows what's really happening there? Because I don't think anybody really knows. The only thing I can say is that the prospectus needs to happen. I'm being told by Alex that the prospectus is progressing very well. You know, there should be news in the next period of time. So that's currently down 16%. If we'd done this 3 days ago, it probably wasn't down at all. But we had great hopes for this one doing very well in the first quarter. Well, for many, many news-worthy situations, if you go back and listen to the previous one, I think Phil chose it, and I wanted to choose it as well as one of my top 3. And yeah, it hasn't achieved what we'd hoped in the first quarter, if we're absolutely honest. Do I think it will finish where above where it is today? No, I strongly do. But they've got to get these things over the line. And it's as simple as that. There's been a lot going on, I think, in the background that we don't really know what's been happening. But a lot of it has been good. And I mean, I have to say that the tie-up that was announced this week with the AA, I think is a big thing. I think that's been underestimated. But then 40 million shares were traded on that day and a big 20 million sell. So what's happening? Again,
you don't know.
We don't know.
You don't know what's happening in terms of stock being moved on. Okay, well, let's move on to Aterion. What do you make of that one? Obviously, it's dropped back a bit, hasn't it? It's around about the 0.7, 0.68 mark.
It's dropped back, but again, why? It's not for any specific reason. They haven't done anything other than good things. They've had an announcement about Botswana in terms of bringing on some stuff. Things are still progressing very well with Rio and the lithium in Rwanda. And
Morocco as well. But what about trading?
Morocco.
The market's thinking the trading should have been underway?
Probably. Again, promise not quite delivered there. But I don't really think, if you look at the volumes, that's had much of an impact on the share price. It's a tightly held share, in my view, and, you know, on good news, and there is plenty of catalysts that I think can happen with that. You got good news potential from Morocco. You've got good news potential from Rio. You've got the trade in kicking off. So there are many, many different things that I think can make that. You know, one day and all of a sudden, I mean, it's 0.08 is how we picked it. It's currently 0.07. You could argue, as you said before, that actually is just the trading range because a week or two ago it was up above 0.8 and now it isn't.
So yeah, it's just spread in it, basically.
It is. So right. Not much has happened. We need more advancement on that, but let's hope that happens. Okay, down to one of your favorites, I think, Jubilee Metals.
Yeah,
again, down 9% from when we chose it.
Nothing really, is it? I mean, they had a really good update on Friday, basically just going through the projects update, and they pulled out some of the highlights. But when you look at what that company has achieved, really, they got that amazing strategic investment with Abu Dhabi's International Resources Holdings, IRH, obviously for the development of the waste rock project, and also progress on the Roan copper facility in Zambia, together with the continued expansion, as we spoke to Leon about the expansion of the chrome operations. Yeah, I mean, we're talking about four copper processing modular plants, a waste rock project, which is a combined feed capacity of more than 2.4 million tonnes per annum, targeting the recovery of circa 20,000 tonnes per annum, which obviously attributable about 30% to Jubilee, and they're looking to expand on that. Charles, I don't know if anyone has listened to it, but Charles did a really good interview with Leon last week, so I urge you to go back and listen to that, because I thought that was very, very good. Charles probed him about the warrants and about lots of different things. I thought it was a very good interview, so that was well worth looking at. There was the resource definition of the project Munkoyo as well, which has progressed well with it. They've done the aeromagnetic survey, which identified a large magnetic anomaly, where it's sort of associated with copper mineralization. And then you've got all the chrome and PGM operations in South Africa, which seem to be up on the percentages there. And what do you make of it?
I've said I think it's going to be sort of a mini major of reclamation of critical metals, in this case, especially copper, over the next decade. And I think it's going to be a huge player. I expect, as the year progresses, and the things are put in place for the big deal that they've done, as well as Rowick, the revenues are going to start pouring in. And I mean, we've got copper, 8,700, 8,800, was over 9,000 briefly. So everything's setting up. And I think the PGMs also, the basket is increasing slightly as well, which increases their margins as well. So yeah, we will see for ourselves again in about 4 weeks' time, I think. So yeah, let's see. We're going off to Zambia and South Africa, so we will see the PGM stuff in South Africa, and then head up to northwest Zambia and also to Rowan and Kabwe as well, where they do the processing, and they're in the process of upgrading that so that they can do more tons per annum in terms of the copper. So yeah,
very good. Okay, African Pioneer.
Well, African Pioneer, basically flat, okay? We picked it at 2p and still is 2p.
Yeah, so basically they had the news that they'd already exercised. So First Quantum had already exercised their option on the two licenses, and then they announced that that First Quantum had decided to exercise the option on the further two licenses. So they've taken the option on all four now, basically, haven't they?
Yeah, which should have helped the price, without doubt. And in this crappy market, it hasn't. And the share price is sitting where it is. Again, we're going to go to Northwest Zambia in 4 weeks, and we will be reporting about that. I know Charles Archer is also writing an article about African Pioneer in the next week or two, so watch out for that after Easter. Yeah, again, it's level, probably shouldn't be. You know, copper's risen over the last few months. We visited the place in Namibia also that they have on Gombo, is it? And, you know, so they're going to have the potential for copper there that already has a mining license. So, yeah, there's potentially massive things could happen at African Pioneer. And as you know, it is definitely one of my favorites. I think it's going to come good. I really do think so.
Okay, so then we got Sovereign Metals. They've had some good announcements. Obviously, they had the follow-up drilling initiated north of Kasia resource area, which happened, it was actually announced this past week. Reconnaissance drilling to the south, identifying an 8-kilometer extension of mineralization, which remains open along strike and at depth. Kasia is already the largest natural rutile deposit and second largest flake graphite deposit in the world, and with a mineral resource estimate of 1.8 billion tons at 1% rutile and 1.4% graphite, comprises broad and contiguous zones of high-grade rutile and graphite that occur across an area of over 201 square kilometers. The optimization program for the Kasia project continues in conjunction with the strategic investor Rio Tinto. So they're just basically expanding out, aren't they? They're just doing follow-up drilling and expanding the area out. And it is, Kasia is an absolute monster, isn't it? When you look at the size of it, that's 200 square kilometers. It's frightening how big it is.
Yeah, I can't say anymore. I don't know why it hasn't gone up in price, because, I mean, I think the for sale signs out there and Rio are basically going to be taking it on. I can't see that they're going to do anything different. There is going to be a big update, I think, shortly in terms of the how much resource is there from the drilling that's done, as you said. Yeah, I think everyone's going to be clamoring to get into this at some point in the next few weeks or months, in my view. And that is going to be the sort of the test, if you like. But we will see. I mean, on a positive note, it's up 3% so far this year. It was higher than that. It was up 15-20%, I think, at one point, 28-29p, and has come back again. So, yeah.
Absolutely. Okay, moving on to the next one, where we've got Prospects Energy. Obviously, if you didn't hear in the week, we had a good chat with Mark Routh, CEO of Prospects. Mm-hmm. They obviously had an announcement in the week. They talked about effectively they're now debt-free. They've repaid the debt on the CLN. So, again, a flummox as to why it hasn't moved. Gas prices seem to have stabilised. You know, the production, it's in steady state. They're getting this circa 650,000 euros per quarter, which is net to Prospects. And they've got this 18-month BP marketing gas agreement and in deal in place. So, yeah, a bit flummoxed on that one. But the fact is it's still up. It should be stronger, really, from where it is. And who knows in this market?
Yeah, up 3%. Again, I mean, I think we can safely say that from African Pioneer, Sovereign Metals, Prospect Energy, whether they're up, down, around, they're probably all flat, ultimately. And then, yeah, it should be high. It has been hit by the gas price for sure, but I think, is it the Selva field that they're going to be increasing the number of wells and drilling to find the gas that they know is already there?
Yeah.
And then putting that in production. So that's going to give them probably two or three times the production.
Yeah.
And which is two or three times the profit. You know,
fund all that, can't they, as well, with the revenues. And also, the one for me is the Spanish assets. Like, when you look at the size of Tesorillo, you know, it's something like 83 billion cubic feet is Tesorillo. And it's all just waiting on a lot of these permits from the Spanish government. And we know how quickly they move. So if news comes on that, I think that will really, you know, cement the value of this company, really.
Yeah. And then we move on to our current leader in the board. And this week we asked Oliver Friesen to say a few words. So have a listen for yourself what he has to say.
Hello, everyone. This is Oliver Friesen, the CEO of Golden Metal Resources, just popping on here to provide a quick refresher as to what the company has been able to accomplish in the first 11 months since it listed. here on AIM in London. But I think more importantly, to provide some additional information and context as to what listeners and investors can expect from the company for the remainder of 2024. And what I would say is the first 11 months since we've been listed, it's been about putting really important building blocks in place and just creating a name for ourselves here into the market. Obviously, being a newcomer on the AIM market here, you know, people don't know who we are, who the team is that is behind the investment. So what we've done is done a lot of marketing and put a lot of important building blocks in place, getting our projects, advancing them, getting them to a drill-ready stage, getting things permitted. But now I think for, you know, the remainder of 2024 and beyond, I think this is when things really get exciting. So we've moved from sort of building block stage to a stage of what I think we'll see a lot of growth out of the company. And we've evidenced that with this huge important RNSs we put out to start the year. One notable one was the fact that we completed a strategic fundraise of £750,000 with one strategic investor. That raise was also done at a premium to the market price, which not many companies can do or can say that they've done in the last little while here. So with that money in place, that gives us the confidence and the, more importantly, the ammunition and firepower here to go and get started with what will be the company's first ever drilling campaign. And that's going to be completed on our Pilot Mountain project. We've, as part of those building blocks that I discussed previously, we've identified five very, very compelling and exciting targets at our Pilot Mountain project, all which are outboard of the main resource, which is found on that project, which also is the largest undeveloped tungsten deposit on U.S. soil. So we permits are currently pending. We're finalizing discussions with the drilling contractor and looking to have that contract signed quite quickly here. We're getting the program fully staffed up right now. So that will be a really exciting one, and one for our investors to look forward to, not only when that project commences, but most importantly, the results coming from that program, as we're going to be testing a lot of really exciting targets there, as well as doing some really important infill and step out drilling at Desert Scheelite there as we look to advance the project and get this closer to a construction decision. So that's something to sort of look forward to is the next steps on drilling. So keep an eye open for news as we progress towards that drilling campaign. And then also on top of that, Garfield is a project which has certainly impressed many market participants, including myself as a geologist, and one that we're certainly going to continue to push forward here. So we have boots on the ground right now doing a very next important step here, which is ground magnetics, looking for the identification of potential porphyry centers. And as soon as those results are released, we'll announce what the next steps will be following the collection of that data. So lots to look forward to. The other assets are also moving forward, but focal point for the next couple of weeks and months here will be on getting these programs completed and started when it comes to Pilot Mountain drilling. And then beyond that, there's going to be a lot of news across the portfolio. And as I mentioned, it's going to be, I think, a very exciting period of growth here for Golden Metal as we get the drill bit on the ground, we get moving at Pilot Mountain, looking to make new discoveries, getting that project further and further advanced and looking to make new discoveries and other assets in the portfolio. So keep an eye on our Twitter, Golden Metal Res, our website, goldenmetalresources.com, where a lot of information is always being posted about what the company's doing and what to look forward to. Thanks.
So what do you think, Phil? Up 46%, has been a bit higher. They just placed money at 15p, which would have meant sort of 60% up probably. Yeah, as Oliver has said in his piece, amazing performance, not share performance, amazing performance on the ground, because the share, I still think, way lags what is likely to happen. Like way, 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 way lags. And we talked about this last week with Power Metal Resources as well. In fact, they own 61%, I think, is of Golden Metal Resources. So, yeah, a worthy leader at this moment in time. Question, will they be leading at the end of the year?
Quite possibly, yes. On the 12 stocks, maybe. Probably not on the five gold rings, which you're going to come to in a minute. And I'll give you the reasoning behind that. But yeah, I think he's done remarkably well. You know, bear in mind, they've only been really listed not even a year. I think you keep alluding to it. It was like May the, or was your birthday, was it
May the 10th.
May the 10th. Okay, May the 10th. I need that one printed in my brain. But yeah, May the 10th. So not even a year on the market. Here they are. You know, they've done a lot of work. All the projects, not just Garfield. It's not just Pilot Mountain. You know, not just Kibbe. There's been frequent. If you look at the RNSs, I struggle to think of a company that is, I'm just flicking through them now. You know, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. You know, it's almost 2 a month, really, in terms of updates. Yeah. There's been nothing short of phenomenal. Some months, I'm looking at February, you've got 1, 2, 3, 4 RNSs in Feb. You've had about 4 or 5 in March. All right, some of them are just holdings in the company, but mainly they are updates on the project. So phenomenal news flow. So he's hit the ground running. Oliver is brilliant. I love the way he delivers. He speaks so confidently. And again, if you haven't listened to the Charles interview that Charles did with Oliver, I think it was another fantastic listen. I think that obviously that if the news comes on the government, on the US government grant on tungsten for the Pilot Mountain project, that could really put a rocket up it. So yeah, ultimately, the share price is probably, you know, it's doing well. 40, what are they now? Around about the 12.5 million cap. It's been probably as high as 14, 15. Yeah, let's see what happens over the next few months. But certainly very impressed with the way Oliver's delivered.
Yeah. No, my prediction is if they get the finance and the drilling and all the different things happen this year, that highly unlikely that will be less than a 30 to 40 million pound cap by the end of this year, in my view. And it could be much higher, but that would be my prediction. So anything else is going to have to at least double or do 150%, I think, from here, which is more than possible. So let's see. So are there any of those 12 stocks you're now thinking, wish we hadn't bought that one?
I don't think so. I think we've all got a very solid chance of, I think a lot of them are undervalued. In fact, there's probably not anything on there that I'm looking at now that I think is overvalued or even fair value. So I would not change them. And I certainly, you know, don't think that that any of them haven't got a very good chance of increasing from these levels.
And if you had to pick one for the next quarter, as in the one that will do best in the next quarter, which one do you think it will be?
If the prospectus news comes, I think Technology Minerals has got a good chance of doing 100% from it, you know, from here over the next quarter. If the grant comes, if there's any news on any grant from the US government, I think Golden Metals has got a chance of doing very, very well from here. And if there's any increase in the gas prices, which there's talk about gas having another run, then Prospects Energy may...
Okay, so you're sitting on the fence here.
One stock. I'll go with Technology Minerals based on the premise that if that prospectus lands, then it should re-rate the company based on the valuation of recyclers, etc.
Okay. As they always say, go for the one that's done the worst. In my view, I think Chill's got a great chance of doing very well in the next quarter for various different reasons. I think all of the crap that you talked about is well overdone and out the way. And, you know, the new products are going to start to be on the shelves. And sales are still happening in a very good way. So when we get some numbers on that, I think people are then going to be able to put some numbers behind it themselves and realize that, you know, for this to get back to 4.7p is not a big ask in my view in terms of the overall value. So
5 gold rings then.
Let's move on to the 5 gold rings. Now, just to put people in the picture, we chose 12 stocks that we thought were going to do very well this year, but there has to be certain criteria in those stock. The 5 gold rings, not so much in terms of criteria. They could be very risky, and that's why we call them 5 gold rings, because they could do very well or very badly. Now, overall, the 5 gold rings have actually performed at 0% effectively. So they're completely flat. Now, if you look at your basket of £50,000, i.e. 5 stocks, £10,000 each, then you'd be thinking, that's not such a bad performance in this market. But then we look at it, and let's go from top to bottom again. The worst performer has been First Class Metals. Would you have guessed that?
No, not at all.
At 52%, it's unbelievable as far as I'm concerned. Obviously, big seller came into the market, wanted to dump all his shares, dumped them all down to around the 3p level, and it's sat there since. They've had great news on Zigzag. They got another grant. What else have they got to do?
I mean, as you say, they've had the grants announced. They had three RNSs the previous week. Flummoxes mean where they are. You know, just I don't know. I don't understand the way it's been beaten down that well.
Needs some fresh capital and it needs some people looking at it going right now. That's bloody cheap. And I think it is. I think Zigzag could be sold for not far off what the market capitalization of the company is right now. And, you know, if that happens, I think, again, that's going to put a rocket up this year, in my view. But we will see. Let's hope that happens. Let's hope some people realize there's some really good value there. And we will see. So the next one is
Energy Pathways, a recent newcomer to the market.
Energy Pathways. Again, would you have credited it that Energy Pathways would be, you know, 40% down effectively?
Not really, no.
It came to the market cheap already, £5-6 million for a gas project we desperately need in the Irish Sea and off the coast of the northwest of England. And it's got everything set up ready to go. It needs finance. And in this market, that's the problem, I think. Ultimately, it needs finance, so everybody's going, alas, I'm not going to touch it. But now we're getting to silly valuations in terms of what it's worth. So, you know, what should we do? Again, I think they haven't had much news, which doesn't help, but the reality of that stock, again, is it could do 100% in a day on some good news. And then the next one, which is down 22%, is Firing Strategic Minerals. I think basically nobody gets this one.
Yeah.
I think it's not really out there in the public domain that people understand what it's all about. But we're going to Zambia. I don't know whether we're going to be able to see their project. Hopefully we will. But they've taken over a lime production situation in Zambia from Glencore, who spent a lot of money, I think $100 million or thereabouts, and they're taking it over for a fraction of that in payback. And it's going to be a producing asset and produce lots of revenue. It's as simple as that. And then they have the lithium in Ivory Coast, I think it is, which is their exploration play. But really, they're going to be able to self-fund that once they get the lime up and running. So yeah, that's one of the reasons why we chose it. We met them at the show, didn't we, in London in December. And I think it could do very, very well, but nobody seems to know it or understand it as yet.
Yeah, they've done some recent drilling. They did some RC drilling, didn't they, at that ATEX project in the lithium project in the Côte d'Ivoire, the Ivory Coast, as you said. And I think they sunk about 23 holes. That was announced at the beginning of March. And I think they've sent the samples to Intertek for saying, so let's see what comes of those. And if they can confirm the lithium, you know, what the grades are like at the ATEX project, that'll be interesting. But I think they've got like 23 or 24% of the one you alluded to at the lime project in Zambia there, which, as you say, Glencore invested a lot of money into over the number of years, with an option to go up to like 33%. But I think they got the option on it for like $1 million or something, so they got a good deal on that one.
Yep. So watch this space for that. And then we've got Extract Resources, which I'm just scratching my head, basically.
What's the valuation on Extract now at that price? At around about, I think it's around about the 0.85, 0.9 mark. What's the value?
Yeah, it was 0.9. I think it's about 7 or 8 million pounds.
7 million market cap. And how much money did they get from the disposal of the Manica Gold Project?
More than that.
So they're valued under cash, basically, now.
Yeah, well, if you assume that the cash is all, which it isn't, it's coming sort of, I think, quarterly, 7.5 million. And what they will receive in cash is more than that. So, yeah, doesn't make a lot of sense.
So it's value them negatively at the moment in terms of cash, assets, you know, the Kikuyu project, the other Zambian, northwest Zambian assets that they've added, and, you know, everything else, you know, the Bushranger effectively zero. Under zero,
maybe. less than zero. And it has one or two of the most prospective licenses in northwest Zambia. It's bananas.
So on to the top performer on the five gold rings for this quarter. Probably no surprise. Just listen to Chairman Tim McCarthy. I thought it was a very good interview. Obviously, performance has been good. It's up over 100%. It's about 110% up at the time. 115%, should I say, at the time of recording this. It was up higher than that. It hit about 18 pence in the week on the news, obviously, of the increase, the commercial update and the increasing of the rollout to Marionord and the products. So, yeah, not surprising. And I still think it's got you know, further to go based on this rollout and on potentially the Asian rollout. What are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I mean, you just have to look at the revenue numbers, and it's quite obvious that it's still got a huge distance to go. And they might be held back a little bit by people selling some stock to buy the warrants, because I think there's warrants at 9.5p, isn't there? So that might be a short-term delay in terms of its overall valuation. But, you know, if you ask me now, from the 17 stocks we have, which one will have the best performance in 2024, I think I'd have to say Incantera, unless African Pioneer has something with First Quantum that basically they want to buy the licenses. If they do, all bets are off. African Pioneer will be the highest performer this year. It will be probably between 500 and 1,000% from where it is now. But that's an if and a but and a maybe, whereas Incantara is not an if and a but and a maybe. It's, will people buy the skincare product? My view is yes. You've tested the product yourself and said it's very good. It's helped you with some skin conditions, and I definitely could use it right now with the state of my hands after the medication and stuff I've taken. Yeah. So yeah, I think we shouldn't say no brainer, but it's done over 100% from when we first looked at it. But the reality is it hasn't got started yet. It really hasn't. Still a market cap of what, 13 million, is it? Something like that? Yeah. Market cap, £13 million. And revenue predicted of £10 million in the next financial year, starting from basically today. And the following years, 30 million. And that's only on the note. The reality is they'll be in Asia in 2025. So you could be talking 50 to 80 to 100 million of revenue in that year with a 30% margin. So you do the numbers. That's 30 million EBITDA in 2025, 26 year. And it's worth £13 million.
The numbers on that, on the Stanford Capital, some people take them with a pinch of salt, but I think they have been pretty conservative. So even if they can get the lower end of those numbers from just the, even from just the European rollout rather than the Asia, because there's two sets, isn't there? There's a European table, and then there's an Asian table, or effectively both. And ultimately, even if they get somewhere in the middle, then they'll be doing very, very well. So actually brings me on to, I mean, the fact they're on Aquis actually is offering some, I think Aquis sometimes allows a bit of a buffer and a bit of stability in the share price to some of these companies, and the way that AIM moves and some of the fluctuations and things we see on those markets. But actually Aquis sometimes, the way sometimes it's harder to trade, sometimes it's a phone call, and people probably less likely to want to pick up the phone. So sometimes it gives you a little bit more stability, and we're seeing that. And just to a point that you raised earlier on, which I thought was we do need to talk about, we've seen a glut of companies of late taking things private. We saw C4X Discovery Holdings, MEN, Molecular Energies, and Biotrol this week, starting with the proposed cancellation of the ordinary shares to trading on AIM and a re-registration as a private listed limited company from C4X. Then MEN did exactly the same thing. And Molecular Energies is quite a firm favourite a lot along the retail. And they're basically, the board said the decision, which they'd already explained in a detailed circular to shareholders, comes after assessing that the advantages of being publicly listed, such as access to capital, which you talked about earlier, share use as currency, and reputational benefits, no longer outweigh the high costs associated with a public listing. So interesting comments from the MEN board. And then Biotrol as well, they basically said that they basically announced it alongside a trading update and said, by the way, we're taking the company private. And those two announcements on Thursday crashed the SP. Share price went down 80%. I mean, it seems suicidal to announce it, but ultimately, what other options have they got?
Yeah, well, people just wanted their cash out, didn't they? Any cost, because when it goes private, then you have to wait for a liquidity event. Just the same as any limited company,
yeah,
but he sets up a business.
Or a match bid system, which, as we know, never works. You know, you're not going to be able to offer. Who's going to want your shares at that point when it's, you know, unless there's going to be divvies paid, or there's an upcoming liquidity event that maybe someone knows about, you're very unlikely to see your money again. It is a shame, but, you know, what can be done? I think Charles wrote an interesting piece, didn't he, about saying FCA, come on, sort this out. People are literally ditching, you know, AIM markets, not just AIM, but some of the other markets, because they don't want the associated. One, it's not beneficial. Sometimes it's, you say it's easy to access capital. It isn't in the current times, is it, to access capital through them?
Not at all.
You do access it, you end up diluting the company down because you have to do it at a massively discounted placing, and some of these brokers have been, we've seen, do that. So there's the other news as well from Bidstack. I mean, what do you make of that, taking the company into administration and then buying it back for a song, James Draper?
Yeah, I have no words, to be honest. I understand why he's done it, but it's disgraceful behavior, and then to lord it over everybody after he's done it, that's not very good, is it?
Okay, any standout RNSs this week as well while we're on the markets? I mean, Lyft had an announcement.
Lyft Global Ventures has the Phoenix from the flames. Basically, they've managed to secure a $12 million funding for the pipeline project in Ghana. And this basically is £750,000 invested. Now, if this gets to financial close, which will then mean they will then have another, I think it's $70 million added to that to then start the pipeline. You're talking about the project being worth 3, 4, 5 times what the £750,000 invested was. So if you do the maths on that, that would mean that probably Lyft's portion of that is £3 million, which would give Lyft a share price without Zach's media business in there of around the 3 to 4 pence mark, which it listed at 3p, as we well know. So yeah, it could be Phoenix from the flames. And if it happens, then there is obviously more upside potential once one has happened for it to keep happening.
Yeah.
So right. Yeah. Any
volume on this and it will go off as quickly as it's come down, because it's been absolutely shocking performance, hasn't it, from the IPO at 3p, dropped down to around about the 0.3, 0.25 bar. I think on trading on Thursday on that news, it moved up from only on a few buys from like the 0.35 mark to 0.79. So it's, you know, 50-60% up on probably about £4,000 worth of buy-in, and that's where it's at. So it could move back up there as quick as it's come down. We'll have to, you know.
Yeah, I think it's going to move. It probably going to move into the 1 to 2p range, I think, pretty quickly. I wouldn't be surprised if it doesn't. So yeah, let's wait and see. I think we've talked a lot of stocks today. You know, there's 18 or more stocks. Yep. So let's leave it at that. And wish everybody a very happy Easter. And
And if you're looking for something quickly to watch on TV, there's a couple of things. There's one Ukraine Enemy in the Woods, which I thought was a very, very, very powerful documentary, and which was filmed exclusively by the Ukrainian soldiers, with obviously access to tightly controlled frontline. And then there's a sci-fi program on Netflix called Three Body Problem, and it quickly climbed to the second spot in the UK and US top 10. Despite ending on a cliffhanger, which leaves people eagerly awaiting a second season. So if you like your sci-fi, give that one a watch. I thought it was very, very good. But as Kev says, thanks for listening. We're gonna take a well-earned break, a couple of weeks off. We will be around for the midweek takeaway, which will bring you reactions to RNSs in the week, should we deem them to be done. And thanks for listening. Have a great Easter weekend. And if you like what you've heard, hit the subscribe icon and the bell icon for any future notifications of any future episodes.
Yep, thanks a lot, guys. Let's hope the second quarter is a bit more fruitful.
This podcast was brought to you by Roast PR Limited. If you would like to appear on a future episode of The Sunday Roast, please email admin@thesundayroast.net.